Welcome to the Iditarod, a podcast about what else? The Iditarod, a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio in Nome. I'm your host, Josh Edge. Mitch CV led mushers into the race's halfway point of Hooslia last night. But before we get too far into our episode, here's a quick word from our sponsor.
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating 40 years of fueling the 49th state, is proud to support Iditarod coverage on Alaska Public Media.
Mitch CV claimed the halfway prize yesterday evening, arriving almost 6 hours before the next musher, Nicholas Petit. Just a reminder, we are in the midst of producing our daily episodes, which we'll keep pushing out until the end of the race. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher, or listen on alaskapublic.org. So as I'm sure you know by now, Zachariah Hughes from Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio's Ben Matheson are out on the trail right now. Ben's up with the race leaders while Zach is hanging back toward the middle of the pack. So when Mitch, who is a two-time Iditarod champion, arrived in Hooslia yesterday, there was a big crowd lining that main street to welcome him. And since he was the first musher into Hooslia, CV won the GCI Dorothy G. Page Halfway Award. The prize includes $3,000 in gold nuggets. Hooslia residents also gave Mitch several gifts, like dog collars with custom beadwork and some handmade fur gloves. Now, Ben had a chance to check in with Mitch as he settled in to take his 24-hour break in the checkpoint, and Hooslia is hosting the race for only the second time in race history.
Last time the race came here, there were such good reports of the hospitality and the wonderful people, and I missed out. I came through in just a few minutes, and even then they gave me food and water and a present, and the kids hugged me, and I was like, man, I got to come back. So I wanted to make it back here, and the dogs just didn't need a big rest earlier. You could always do it, but I think I've maximized the team by coming here, and then I still saved my 8 hour for back on the river.
Now, Hooslia has a long tradition of mushing, and it was the home to the late mushing champion George Atla Jr., otherwise known as the Hooslia Hustler. Now, this was the halfway prize, which means the real prize is still hundreds of miles down the trail in Nome. And Mitch says the real racing has indeed begun.
We used to just sort of camp along and then race at the end, and now we're racing from the beginning. It's more of a strategy. It's not all-out sprinting to the finish line, but it's a strategy, and it sets you up for various elements of the trail.
And since Ben had a couple minutes to chat with Mitch, he had to check in on the dogs too.
My guys will do whatever they need to do, you know. So I ran them 36 miles and took 2 hours off, and we hopped up and ran the other 50. And the only thing that ever slowed them down was if the trail was a little soft, and then you want them to slow down and not stress themselves. So I had one dog got his back leg injured, and another one with a sore shoulder, so I'll be sending them home. But make it all the way halfway with all 16 was kind of a first for me, I think, too. So,
at this point in the Iditarod, just about every top team has declared their 24-hour rest and is either recuperating or they're charging back onto the trail. The 24-hour mandatory rest, it gives both the dogs and the mushers a chance to catch their breath and rebuild some strength after, I mean, this year, a lot of cold, long river miles. And Zach says it is one of the main indicators of a musher's strategy, finally giving shape to the accelerating race in the days ahead.
All over the dog lot, on a frozen slough in Galena, mushers attended dogs, their headlamps wobbling in the dark like blue lightning bugs. They're joined by an upbeat Alan Moore, who's just pulled off the Yukon River.
Bib number 36. All right, how many dogs?
16.
All 16 still. All right, what's your plan for staying or going?
Oh, I'm staying.
You're staying for a while?
Why not?
Moore scans a clipboard to see who's come in when, joking a little with the race official checking him in.
You know, I'm thinking long term.
Long term?
Okay. This is a great place. Why not?
I agree.
For Moore, the choice to stop here is motivated mostly by considerations for the dogs on his team.
Yeah, it's just a good checkpoint. It's about 350 miles into the race. I got a couple young dogs that are a little bit, they don't know what's going on, so I just want to get them through it.
Moore was aiming to take his big break here, or else one more checkpoint up in Hooslia. With that decision made, he lets go of the break and slides down a small hill to park on the slough. For other mushers, this is exactly where they aim to be. Pete Kaiser was set on getting his dogs to Galena for a 24 and didn't even pack enough food to get to Huslia if he'd changed his mind.
That's kind of the idea that, you know, they're still doing fine, but you've utilized, you know, most of their energy to here, but not all of it. And I think they're going to bounce back nice from this rest and keep moving forward.
Kaiser hasn't yet taken the 8-hour rest that's required along the Yukon River. He says he's waiting to see how his dogs do on the trail in the next few legs. At this point in the race, rest becomes a strategic calculation, both for the energy involved and the potential plans that it discloses to other competitors. As mushers think through the next 3 or 4 moves they'll make, many are surveying leaderboards and the GPS tracker to assess who's resting up and who's pushing ahead. Not everyone's in Galena because they want to be. Allie Zirkel's dogs started showing signs of illness Tuesday, and in spite of her original plan to make it to Huslia, she's declared her 24 here instead.
My dogs aren't extremely healthy right now. They've got this bug. A few of them have a fever.
Zirkel's hoping the break, combined with the 8 hours she already took not long before, will put her dogs in a good position for the nearly 600 miles to go. Others, like Robert Reddington, picked Galena because they found issues with other checkpoints.
I was going to do it in Ruby, but I had a bad parking spot, so I came here. I'm down a bit.
In the days ahead, mushers will leapfrog up and down the leaderboard as the standings shape up. In Galena, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
We heard briefly from Pete Kaiser in that story. Zach actually checked in with him about how well his dogs were eating because, as we learned in yesterday's episode, if you haven't checked it out, you should probably go do so. How well a team eats can be a big indicator of how they might do further down the trail. Let's take a listen.
They've actually been eating really well, and already fed them. They just ate their third meal in 12 hours, so happy with that. Their appetite will probably start to be curbed a little bit here just because they're getting fed so much so often, but that's okay. Just whatever they can eat in this break.
And was it a lot of fatty stuff earlier on? Are you keeping up with that?
Yeah, it's basically whatever they'll eat. If they'll eat the real fatty stuff, then yeah, that's better. But I think early on in the race, sometimes my team in particular tends to be picky, so I just try to find what they're eating. And then once they start eating that, then later in the race they usually get a bigger appetite, and then you can start feeding them more fatty stuff, high-calorie stuff. But if it's going to warm up to 30 degrees like they say it might, then sometimes it's hard to get a lot of fat in them too. But typically they're burning less calories in the warmer weather, so.
Now, we did find out overnight that a dog has died in this year's Iditarod. Race officials say it happened shortly before midnight, just outside the Galena checkpoint. The dog, a 2-year-old named Deacon, was part of race veteran Seth Barnes' team. Vets at the checkpoint tried to resuscitate the animal, but they were unsuccessful. They say a necropsy will be performed to determine the cause of the dog's death. Now, while most of the focus of the race is obviously and deservedly on dogs, mushers, and which team is going to be the first to glide under the Burled Arch and Nome, it also carries with it a tradition of education and presence in classrooms all over the place. It's something Iditarod veteran Hugh Neff takes a lot of pride in.
And I'm actually teaching in Alaskan schools now with several other dog mushers through a program set up by George Atla. I mean, everybody always wants to talk about the great Iditarod mushers. There's nobody compared to George Atla. He's the man, and we all know that. So to be in a program set up by George called H-Hill, where we're actually teaching dog mushing and native culture to kids in Alaska schools, and now to take this message to the kids in Huslia and all around, it's pretty awesome. I'm definitely honored to be the musher selected to be leading the program, so it's a good year. And you guys haven't even brought it up yet, but, you know, the teacher on the trail is from Chicago. She went to my sister's high school, and her husband, boyfriend, you know, this is Loyal Academy right here. He gave me the hat. I got a Loyal Academy T-shirt on. I'm carrying a book that my grade school in Evanston, Illinois gave me that the Pope wrote. So it's definitely got a good Chicago flair this year, I think.
Speaking of the teacher on the trail, we actually have a story from Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early that I'd like to play for you. Wesley caught up with this year's teacher on the trail before she took off on Iditarod 2017.
For 2 years, Annie Kelly of St. Andrew's School in Chicago has been preparing for a new type of lesson plan.
My job is to fly out on the trail in little planes and report back to classrooms across the country that are using Iditarod as a teaching tool.
Kelly found out she was a finalist for the Teacher on the Trail program in January of last year. And just as mushers have extensive preparation on the Iditarod with years of planning, training, and work, so too does Kelly. Between an application process that required letters of recommendation and long-term lesson planning, she says the experience has been nonstop.
So since I was selected as teacher on the trail, I've been keeping a website, and that has tons of lessons that I've been doing with my kids in Chicago, and I share it with teachers across the country. And I've been presenting at a couple conferences and just getting my cold gear weather clothes ready. Chicago did not prepare me well this year. It was a very mild, mild winter there.
For Kelly, getting ready for the weather means more than a hat and gloves.
I think four layers on the bottom, top with some heavy-duty L.L. Bean snow pants, boots that go down to negative 100, and there'll be feet warmers in those boots. Probably four layers on top with a parka. That was well-tested at the Junior Iditarod. Giant hat and, like, four pairs of gloves. And I'll probably only be wearing two at each time. But I've got lots of gloves and hand and feet warmers will be used at all times.
While this is the first and probably only time Kelly will be teacher on the trail, she says back in Chicago, she loves incorporating the Iditarod into lesson plans for her fourth graders.
So my lessons, a lot of them revolve around language arts. We write letters to the mushers, so writing friendly letters, and a lot of times they'll write back, which is really fun. My favorite is one year, one of the rookie mushers hand wrote a letter to my student front backside of a sheet of loose leaf, and it was just so cool that he took the time to do that.
While Kelly will be reporting to her students on all of the mushers, she said she has a couple favorites.
You know, I have a few favorites. Charlie Baina is a musher from Chicago, and so he's come into my classroom, and it's been really awesome. And Allie Zirkel, girl power, I'm excited to see her come in at the finish. And so those are two that I'm rooting for.
And Kelly's students are just as excited as she is for the opportunity.
They've been hearing about it for about 2 years now, this whole process. The biggest thing is just keep warm, Miss Kelly, is all they tell me, and be safe. I had one student write me a card, and it said, if you're afraid of heights and small little planes, don't worry. You're the teacher on the trail. You're not scared of anything.
The last great race formally started today in Fairbanks, and Miss Kelly will be reporting to teachers across the country every step of the way on the Iditarod website. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
So obviously that story aired earlier this week. It aired on Monday when the race started in Fairbanks. Right now, the teacher on the trail is in Galena. That's as of early, early Friday morning. And keeping with the Midwest theme, yesterday I talked briefly about an elementary school class in Wisconsin that's been following our podcast and has one of their own. I was able to chat with the teacher of that class, Felicity Trepto, about how she incorporates the Iditarod into her classroom. And I got the impression right away that the kids are pretty, well, enthusiastic about the race.
Right now on the playground, they are actually forming their own Iditarod teams with students pretending to be dogs and other students pretending to be mushers. And so they are 110% in on anything to do with Iditarod right now.
That's quite the playground game right there.
Yeah.
Alaskans get pretty into
the
it. But
big race is later this week if we get some more snow. We kind of have lost all of our snow right now. We're having a rather unusual warm spring.
Like I said earlier, they produce an Iditarod podcast as well, and it's actually been running longer than this podcast. It's called Ikidapod and is essentially entirely student-produced. Real quick, let's listen to an intro from one of their episodes from this year.
Hello and welcome to iKidapod. We're your hosts for today's program, Hasty Hawk, Icicle Bob, Snowy Husky, and Snowhound. We are Team Shatulik, and today we will be doing trail trivia, mushy lingo, and most importantly, the history of the Iditarod.
Now, I'm not sure if it's the unhealthily huge amount of coffee I've drank this morning and just this week in general, but I love that music, and that is some of the most epic podcast intro music I think I have ever heard. Felicity says the class created a whole bunch of music options in GarageBand and voted on the different ones they came up with. From there, she says the class is divvied up into five groups.
I'm named after the checkpoints. And it's interesting because little roles tend to develop within each podcast team. You know, I tell them I want everyone to speak on the podcast at least once because moms and dads love to hear them. And from there on, you know, you just start to see kids' strengths naturally come out. So you have someone who's really passionate about the editing piece, you know, putting it all together in GarageBand and making sure all the audio is good. You have kids who just would rather be more of the background researchers and writing some of the scripts. And then you have kids who are just very passionate, and they have a lot of great fluency for being on air, we'll call it. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of neat to see how that all just kind of evolves. Each team does three episodes at the bare minimum. We do pre-race coverage the week of the race, and then usually it goes into, you know, the third week. We'll keep on producing episodes until the Red Lantern is claimed.
Again, their podcast is called iKidapod. And you can find it on iTunes, and I'll post a link to it on our website, alaskapublic.org, if you want to go check it out. When Felicity first reached out to me over email, she sent along a picture of her classroom wall that it's absolutely decked out and full of Iditarod-related stuff.
So in our writing portion, we assigned two mushers to each student, and they were required to research and kind of write up a mini biography of each musher and prepare like a musher trading card. And we did all of that on their iPads and then printed them off. And so we hung that above our wall. And so the kids immediately became attached to who their musher was. And then on my kitchen floor, rolled out a huge piece of packaging paper and kind of created the Iditarod map. I now have three of them for the northern route, the southern route, you know, odd and even years, and then the lack of snow route.
Yeah.
And so I hang that in the hallway, and then we have little pictures of each musher. And so every morning and afternoon, we kind of update where the mushers are. Meanwhile, the students are doing the Iditarod, where they are kind of competing in their own Iditarod, in a sense, versus reading. So they're trying to read page per mile. And their goal is to read as many pages as our mushers mush in miles before the Red Lantern is achieved.
I'll post a picture she sent to the post for this episode on our website, again, alaskapublic.org. It's pretty impressive. You should check it out. I don't know why, but I'm always really surprised at just how far-reaching the Iditarod is. And when I asked Felicity how else she incorporated it into her classroom, aside from the podcast, I was really blown away by just how deep they dive into the race.
And that, I think, is one of the best parts about the Iditarod, is there are so many curricular tie-ins. When we just look at language alone, you know, they're reading news articles, so that's a lot of nonfiction text exposure. They're summarizing to write their scripts for the podcast. Of course, we're reading the book Woodsong along with it, which is rich with vocabulary. You know, as they're creating their podcast, they're working on their fluency, writing for a specific purpose. And then within math, my kids have really gotten into the whole calculating the pace using that GPS tracker right now, as well as I had a student trying to tally up the cost that it might take to enter the Iditarod. And then you look at, like, the calories that the dogs are burning. You know, with geography, we have the whole mapping GPS unit. In science, you know, even talking about just the dogs themselves and why they can do what they do. So I think that's one of the best parts about the Iditarod, is there's so many different angles and tie-ins that you can include.
And even though they're learning about all the mushers and, you know, just the race in general, she says a few classroom favorites have emerged.
Well, of course, you know, everybody is anxious to see all of our mushers who are sitting at that four-win spot. you know, they're all rooting for them to get that fifth win because we know that that would be quite the achievement. Personally, Allie Zirkel sent my class a postcard last year after she listened to one of our episodes where she was featured as a Meet the Musher. And so she's kind of become one of my favorites. So I tend to talk about her quite a bit, as well as her husband, Alan Moore. And then we have a lot of mushers, actually, who have some background or they were raised in Wisconsin. And so the kids typically kind of really latch onto them as well. They're kind of rooting for the hometown mushers.
In yesterday's episode, you heard a couple questions from some students in the class, and we've received a bunch more from them, and we'll try to answer as many as possible. But for now, here's one more.
Hi, my name is Cademan. I'm a fourth grader from Wisconsin. I was wondering, is it true that Allie Zirkel hugs each of her dogs and thanks them just a few miles out of the finish line?
Now, I sent this question up to Zach, since he seems to have all the answers, but he was actually able to track down Allie along the trail so she could tell you herself.
No, I hug all my dogs all the time. Actually, I like to... So the reason I like dog mushing is I actually like dogs. That's why I got dogs to begin with. I adopted 6 dogs many years ago. Well, I adopted one, and then he wouldn't pull just me, so I had to adopt 5 more. And I like the relationship that people have with dogs, you know, forever. Now, these dogs, I'm lucky. They like to run and they like to pull, so they do that for me. But I think the basic relationship of a dog and a human is still, you know, compassionate respect that you have for a working animal and for an individual. Each one of those dogs has his own personality and pluses and minuses. And I mean... But they still look at you like, what can I do for you? And that's an amazing thing to have this beast, basically, looking at you saying, what do you need me to do? And you're in control of that. So I like to give back to them, you know? So I like to pet them a lot, scratch them behind the ears, hug them, and then I like to howl with them. Because they're howling, it's like a pack, and I feel like I'm part of the pack. So that's my answer.
We do have one more thing for you today. It's not all fun and games out on the trail. It's also a fair amount of eating. And while they were both briefly in Galena at the same time, Zach and Ben sat down over a bag of moose jerky, of course, for this reporter's notebook about a little discussed part of Iditarod coverage, snacks.
I'm going to mic this just like it were an official interview, except... talking about snacks. This is a reporter's notebook called Snack Attack with Zach and
Ben Matheson.
So we have my snack bag here, and we're just going to go through because I think it's important to talk about what trail reporters eat on the trail. A lot of it's in, like last night we were at a bed and breakfast, and so we got dinner from our amazing host. Other times it's at the checkpoints. There's like a community hall and my probiotics. And people will bring and drop off food. And so you have stuff there like rice with moose or caribou soup or stroganoff or macaroni and cheese and stuff like that. But then there's other times when you have to...
That's a rotten apple.
Apple was rotten. I hope it didn't taint anything. But there's other times when you just gotta have snacks. So, Ben, what do you see in my snack pack?
6 ounces Alaska Hunter Stick. 2 different types. There's moose and there's reindeer.
Those are actually my ancillary meat packs. What we broke into was the good stuff. This is moose jerky that my amazing girlfriend's amazing brother got in Kotzebue. He got the moose. We're eating his jerky.
I'm seeing a Zone Perfect Nutrition Bar, chocolate peanut butter, which probably costs like $6 a piece and is a complete nutrition...
No, they cost $5.29 for 5 at the grocery store that I go to. I'm a big fan.
I've tasted them. They're actually pretty good.
They're like chocolate bars, but they're high in protein.
This is a Clif Bar.
All right, we don't have to go over all of the different protein bars. There's a lot of protein bars. Remember our motto, high in protein, low in sugar.
Which is why you got a 6-pack of Snickers.
Those are for dessert. Sugar. Those are for when I am suffering. I'm going to break into those later on the trail.
One 2-pound bag of trail mix, mostly chocolate and raisins. Very low sugar.
Yeah. It's not mostly chocolate. I took the healthy nut and raisin mix, and then I dumped in about 2 fistloads of chocolate-covered raisins.
1 3-pound bag of cuties, which are little clementines.
Clementines, just a bag of clementines. That's all it is.
Branded as cuties.
What did you bring?
I did a bad job at preparing for portable snacking, which is probably the name of the game when you're traveling as much as we are. I've got a jar of peanut butter, approximately 2,500 calories.
How many of those calories do you think you've gone through so far?
Zero, but I'm going to attack that tonight because I'm kind of hungry. 1 large thing of onion bagels. Very good. Even cold.
Is it a Minnesota thing to pronounce it bagels?
I just pronounce it the correct way, bagels. I really meant to buy some meat products to stay warm. Also some cheese, but that kind of got lost in the shuffle. I do have a 4-pound bag of trail mix that it's a little more for emergencies. I haven't hit it with full gusto. I just stuff into my pockets.
I'd say that's probably a pretty good snack pack attack with Zach and
Ben Matheson.
So by my account, between the two of them, that is 6 pounds of trail mix. All right, so that is all we've got for today. As always, thanks to Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes and KNOM Radio's Ben Matheson for all their help, even if they didn't share their moose jerky with me. And also thanks to Wesley Early from Alaska Public Media for tracking down the teacher on the trail. Well, I guess at that point it was the teacher almost on the trail. We are in the midst of producing our daily episodes, so if you like what you hear, you can tune in every day during the race. And to make that easier, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher, or listen on alaskapublic.org. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras, and I'm Josh Edge. Goodbye.
You know, this is my 30th 1,000-miler since 2000. And I do it for a reason, to try to promote getting out there and doing it. It's not just about racing dogs. It's about getting out there and living life every year and letting these dogs see all these trails.